Welcome to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for March 2014. This is issue number 350. I'm your host, Fred Volby. The address for the DX Audio Service is 706 McKenzie Drive, Lima, Ohio, 45805. My email address for general inquiries is fvoby@realoldiesradio.com. For subscriptions or payments, it's sales@nrcdxas.org. My telephone number for short calls is 419-228-6223. That number is not to be used for musings or to leave reports to the DX Audio Service. The musings number is 419-741-0205. A yearly subscription to the DX Audio Service for U.S.-Canadian members is now $30, and the magazine is published on CD. To renew or subscribe, make your check payable to the National Radio Club, Incorporated, and send them to me at the address that I just mentioned, or you can log on to our website at www.nrcdxas.org and sign up using PayPal. If you're on the internet, you can sign up to EDXN and get your DX Audio Service in MP3 format. A subscription to EDXN is only $15. Just point your browser to www.e-dxn.com and subscribe online with PayPal. Subscribe only if you're able to download and navigate a website without anyone else's assistance. Before we go to the AM switch with our good friend Dave Alpert, I'd like to pass along some news and notes. First of all, on the WRTH contest. Well, not too many people must have entered, because yours truly entered, and I was one of the winners, along with Ernie Holt, John R. Wallace Sr., and John Malecki. Congratulations, guys. You got yourself a WRTH free of charge, only for the cost of postage. Contact Wayne at the Publication Center for more information. And the final news and notes is about membership. First of all, I'd like to share something with you from the DX News side of the club, which is the printed side. This comes from the National Radio Club's Board of Directors. As we've noted in recent issues of DX News, we're seeing a dramatic change in the publications that surround us. The International Radio Club of America ceased its printed version of DX Monitor this past fall. Monitoring Times ceased publication after the December 2013 edition, and CQ Publications announced that CQ VHF, Popular Communications, and World Radio would be rolled into one online-only publication. The National Radio Club intends to continue its print and online publications, but we want you to know about the cost implications for the printed version. Some background to put things in perspective. The club had to increase dues twice since June of 2012, when we had raised dues to $38 in an effort to offset the rising printing, handling, and postage costs. This was a partial solution. We relied also on the profits from our book sales to cover those increasing costs. But profits from book sales have declined, and on January 15, 2013, we had to raise the dues to the current $45 per year. This helped stabilize the treasury, and over the last year we saw our cash flow improve from the dues increase and from the brisk sales of the 7th edition of the Antenna Pattern Book and the 34th edition of the AM Radio Log. Now, once again, we're faced with a 3-cent per issue postage increase. Issues of DX News now cost 49 cents to mail 12, 16, 20, or 24 pages. As we pass the 2/3 point in volume 81, our page count for the first 21 issues is as follows: 2 24-page issues, 4 20-page issues, 10 16-page issues, and 5 12-page issues. Each have been mailed with a first-class stamp whose cost has gone up again and will likely keep increasing. At the same time, we're seeing a decrease in subscription count to the printed edition of DX News. Many members have switched over to the much less expensive edxn.com, downloading DX News in PDF format and printing it themselves. The Board of Directors wants you to know that we have no intention of reducing our services or the quality and coverage of DX News. We have, however, concluded that we can best meet the goals of cost control by restructuring our publication schedule. We propose reducing the number of issues to 20 annually and a bi-weekly schedule, while expanding the content of these 20 issues. Current members would receive a 4-week dues extension, and the new printed schedule would take effect with Volume 82, which commences in October of 2014. Your Board of Directors would like to extend to members the opportunity to comment on this plan of action. The Board feels that this move would be in the best interest of the membership and would avoid the need to have another dues increase for the printed edition of DX News. Please direct your comments to any board member. Our contact information is available from the DX Audio Service. Signed, the National Radio Club's Board of Directors. Now that we've addressed the printed side of the club, you may be wondering about the health of the audio side of the club, the DX Audio Service. It's no secret that we've struggled over time. Postage increases, as well as the cost of cassette media, forced us to go to CDs last year. I think that going to CDs was a wise move, as continued publishing in the cassette media would have raised our costs to a point where dues would have had been well over $60 a year. The thing to keep in mind is, unlike other publications you may receive, the DX Audio Service does not have any support from any entities other than dues. We've seen a drop in the number of members who receive our CDs, the majority of which is due to the economy. I would ask all members to please help our membership roll by getting our name out to friends and publications, which will help spread the word of the DX Audio Service. I'm not sight-impaired or subscribed to their publications, so many of the magazines for the blind will simply not run our information. This is where I need your help to get the word out and to talk up the DX Audio Service. We need more members to keep us running. If we continue to lose CD members, then it may be time to reevaluate our mission and go entirely to a web-only publication. So now is the time for you to get proactive. And speaking of web publication, it would be interesting to hear how many of you listen to the programs from the web. If you listen to the DX Audio Service in MP3 format, would you kindly QSL me by a quick email to fvobe, that's F-V-O-B-B-E, at realoldiesradio.com. That's realoldiesradio.com. And simply put in the subject and the body of the message, I listen. If you want to make other comments, that's great. But I just like to get an idea of how many people listen to our MP3s, as this information is not available to me. And trust me, your email will not get you on a list, and there will not be any other contact from me unless you initiate it. I'd also like to remind our members that you can renew for 6 months at $15 or 3 months at $7.50 by check, which has to be sent to me. The club does not have the ability to process partial year memberships by PayPal. Send your checks to me at the address at the start of the CD, and I'll take care of it. By the way, anything to do with the DX Audio Service should come to me, and not a board member, another member, or publisher of the web or DX News. The best way to contact me is by letter, but if you are patient, you can also call. Please understand that I can't always return calls immediately or within a short period of time. Finally, taking comments from the survey in 2011, as well as comments from members in the past couple of months, we're going to be expanding the DX Audio service with more stories about audio equipment and radio. Your suggestions matter. Now here's Dave Alpert with a look at the AM Switch.
This is the AM Switch.
Hi, everyone. Dave Alpert with the AM Switch. This issue, we have five editions, AM Switch Volume 81, Issues 17 through 20. Starting off with call changes. 570 KSNM, Las Cruces, New Mexico, changes to KGRT. KGRT was the legacy call on 570 until 2000 when it changed to KSNM. 830 WUMY, Memphis, Tennessee, becomes WGUE. 920 WCHR, Trenton, New Jersey, changes calls to WNJE. 1040 WNJE, Flemington, New Jersey, changes to WCHR. 1110 WYRM, Norfolk, Virginia, changes to WKOA. 1120 WMSX, Coral Springs, Florida. This CP, not yet on the air, will now call itself WBUR. 1180 KXIQ, Terrell, Arkansas, changes their call sign to WUMY. 1240 WBUR, West Yarmouth, Massachusetts, changes to WBAS. 1430 KWAP, Wasilla, Alaska, is now KKNI. Silent, 1520 WVOH in Spindale, North Carolina, changes to WGTM, signaling that it may be about to come back to life. 1590 KTCH, Wayne, Nebraska, is now KCTY. 1600 WJSA, Jersey Shore, Pennsylvania, changes calls to WEJS. Changes to existing stations. These are construction permits which are built and moving toward final licensing. 990 KTKT, Tucson, Arizona, for U4, 10,000 watts day, 490 watts night. 1380 WENW, Naugatuck, Connecticut, granted program test authority to use their CP for U4, 3,500 watts day, 350 watts at night. 1420 WAOC, St. Augustine, Florida, applied for license to cover U1, 2 kilowatts day, 230 watts night. Construction permits granted, 1,000 kilohertz KCEO, Vista, California, granted CP for U4, 10 kilowatts day, 900 watts night. 1020 WUST, Washington, D.C., granted a CP for D3, 50 kilowatts day with critical hours power of 3,000 watts, moving to the towers of WJFK 1580. And yes, we agree, this is close to KDKA Pittsburgh. These CPs are now licensed and on the air. 740 WDGY, Hudson, Wisconsin, on the air via their new facilities. 740 KCIK, Kilai, Hawaii, this CP for new station, U1, 5 kilowatts day and night, is on the air and has been reported by National Radio Club members with Catholic programming from Immaculate Heart Radio. 1240 KBIW Altamont, Oregon's construction permit for a new station, U1, 1,000 watts day and night, is on the air and has been reported using the slogan, "The Winner," with CBS Sports. 1250 WTMA Charleston, South Carolina's construction permit for a new site and pattern is on the air. 1330 KTON Cameron, Texas has completed their construction and they're on. And 1590 WPVI Plattsville, Wisconsin is on with their new facilities. New station construction permit applying for license to cover. That means the station is built and may begin testing soon. 1550 KDCO Golden, Colorado, this new station with U2, 990 watts day and 350 watts night. An application to amend a construction permit submitted by 960 WFIR, Roanoke, Virginia, is licensed for U2, 5,000 watts day and night with a CP for U2, 10,000 watts day and 4,400 watts night. Now WFIR applies to amend that CP to U2, 10,000 watts day and boosting the night power to 5 kilowatts. Special Temporary Authority 1040 WHBO Pinellas Park, Florida applies for an STA for U1, 600 watts day, 105 watts night from the WWBA 820 site. 1310 WDTW Dearborn, Michigan, the once proud Keener 13, granted an STA of U1 900 watts day and night from an emergency antenna. 1320 WXBO Aberdeen, Washington, granted an STA to operate at reduced power or with parameters at variance during diplexing of KWOK 1490. 1380 KTKZ Sacramento, California, granted an STA for pattern at variance, while KDPP 890's construction permit to diplex with KTKZ is being installed. 1520 KOKC, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, granted an STA for U1 5,000 watts day and night from an auxiliary transmitter after their main 50,000 watt transmitter had catastrophic failure on January 27th. This is the old coma for us old timers. 1540 WYCL Niles, Ohio, granted special temporary authority for D1 125 watts from an emergency antenna. And 1580 WJFK Morningside, Maryland, applies for an STA to operate non-directional at 25% of power or with parameters at variance during triplexing of WUST 1020 and WZHF 1390 into a common antenna. What does parameters at variance mean in STAs? Glad you asked. The licenses of stations with directional antenna patterns specify both the precise engineering details of the licensed pattern and maximum allowed signal strength at particular monitor points at key locations within the station's coverage area. If for some reason the antenna system isn't generating the proper pattern, the station is out of compliance with its license. And if the situation lasts for any length of time, the station needs an STA. One option is simply to operate non-directionally, usually at 20% of licensed directional power. Another solution is to operate with parameters at variance, meaning with whatever directional pattern the antenna system is actually producing, provided the readings at the monitor points remain within the tolerances set for the license. If the station is throwing too much signal to one or more monitor points using the aberrational pattern, it must reduce power accordingly. So, a station operating with parameters at variance is operating with a directional pattern not specified in the license, in theory, not putting more signal out in any direction than it should, but perhaps putting out less signal than licensed at some bearings. Silent stations, just a reminder, if you hear a silent station coming back on the air or note someone off the air for the first time, call the Musings line or at the least email Fred and let him know. Now, stations informing the FCC they are silent. 580 KRSA, Petersburg, Alaska. Their license expired February 1st and they didn't file for renewal. 585, yes, that's correct. 585 KGAL, Tafuna, America, Samoa. Their license expired February 1st and they didn't file for a renewal. Just a hunch, but it's possible both KRSA and KJAL just forgot to renew, so after they find their license deleted, they might wake up. 930 CJYQ St. John's, Newfoundland is off the air due to a transmitter fire on January 28th. 950 WSEW Seward, Alaska, their license expired February 1st. They didn't file for renewal. 1070 WSCP Sandy Creek, Pulaski, New York has been silent since November 30th due to a transmitter failure. Ken Chatterton, let us know when they come back on. 1240 WNRA Eufaula, Alabama has been off the air since January 10th due to transmitter failure. 1270 WEIC Charleston, Illinois voluntarily surrendered their license by letter to FCC dated January 23rd. 1360 WHJC Matewan, West Virginia silent again as of January 17th due to transmitter problems. 1270 WSHE Columbus, Georgia, off the air pending completion of sale. 1400 WPCE Portsmouth, Virginia, silent since October 1st, 2013, after losing their tower site. 1490 WDXL Lexington, Tennessee, informed the FCC on December 26th the station would be going silent January 1st and surrender its license. for financial reasons. 1550 WZRK, Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, is silent again as of January 20th due to technical problems with the antenna pattern and no money to fix it. Colorado AM, KDEB 1470, Estes Park, is now deleted and gone after Vic Michaels' last-ditch attempt to keep the license alive by broadcasting from a long-wire antenna. The FCC rejected his license renewal application for KDEB, and the license has been surrendered by Michaels' Kona Coast Radio. The station had been silent, mostly, since September 20th, 2012, when they lost their tower site. Then came serious flooding in Estes Park, but the request to broadcast with just 30 watts on a temporary basis is nixed, and the station's now known officially to the FCC as DKDEB, as for delete it. By the way, speaking of silent stations and why they're silent, Fred Volbe noted the following on Radio Now. Quoting the article, is Cumulus just letting some stations fade away? Stations like WJWF 1400 in the Mississippi market of Columbus Starkville, perhaps? It's just one of the stations where Cumulus has made repeated STA requests to the FCC, pleading various issues with transmitter parts, vandalism, etc. Certainly stuff like that happens, but you wonder about the larger pattern, especially at a company that seems to go light on its capital expenditures. Last August, Cumulus told the commission that WJWF's Harris SX1 transmitter failed completely and that replacement parts for this older model transmitter are difficult, if not impossible, to obtain. Now, in filing for another six-month STA to remain silent, Cumulus says it's been investigating the costs of obtaining a new or used transmitter and insists it's interested in restoring service and is planning to do so in the next couple of months. But one engineering veteran says the parts they need for their old SX-1 could be had on eBay for a couple of grand, or they could have a replacement used transmitter there in a few days for $6,000 to $8,000. A new one might run them all of $12,000. And at Deadline, we received news that Seattle's Christian KARR 1460 may go dark February 28th. The cause appears to be unrelated to the recent death of Harold Camping, the founder of Family Stations in Oakland. The Northwest Broadcasters site says the problem was a looming end-of-month loss of transmitter site. Real estate is expensive around Kirkland, north of Bellevue, and the landlord may have other uses for a transmitter site with 3 AM towers. KARR is licensed for 5,000 watts daytime, 2,500 watts at night with different directional patterns day and night. A second station is potentially implicated as well. Disney's Radio Disney O&O KKDZ Seattle at 1250. It uses the same Kirkland site for its nighttime signal and presumably was making alternate arrangements for the night signal. It would need an STA to stay on nights in the near term. Its daytime site in West Seattle is unaffected, but it's only got one tower because it's non-directional. Radio Disney's current 5,000-watt directional nighttime signal requires four towers. The Federal Communications Commission is cleaning out the files, and these applications for new stations are all dismissed for various reasons. 540 in Kuna, Idaho, for U4, 9,500 watts day and 400 watts night. 740 Hilo, Hawaii, U1, 250 watts day and night. The application for WQTH in Claremont, New Hampshire, has finally been deleted from the FCC database, ending a lengthy appeal process for this unbuilt station. 1020 in Talent, Oregon, for U4, 10,000 watts day and 500 watts night, has been dismissed. 1030 KEGC, Elk Grove, California. This CP for a big new station, U4, 50 kilowatts day, 10,000 watts night, is expired and is now deleted. 1100 in Boise, Idaho, U2, 50,000 watts day, 630 watts night, gone. Application for the new station on 1190 at Nellis Air Force Base, just northwest of Las Vegas, Nevada, has been dismissed. It would have been U7, 50,000 watts day and 7,000 watts night. The application on 1200 in Riverton, Utah, has been dismissed. If built, it would have been U2, 30,000 watts day, 2,400 watts night. 1290 in Clifton, Colorado. For you, too, 25,000 watts day, 350 watts night. 1290 Las Vegas, Nevada. You, too, 1 kilowatt day, 250 watts at night. 1540 in Tangelo Park, Florida. For you, 4, 1,424 watts day, 250 watts at night. 1540 in Rincon, Georgia, for U4, 5,000 watts day, 250 night. 1570, Powhatan, Virginia, U2, 10,000 watts day and 600 watts night. And finally, 1580, Shasta Lake, California, the application for a new station, U2, 250 watts day and night, has been dismissed. These formerly silent stations have informed the FCC that they're back on the air. 1210 WDGR, Dahlonega, Georgia, silent since January 21st, is back on. 1290 WDZY, Colonial Heights, Virginia, silent since September 28th of last year, has returned. 1330 WGFT, Campbell, Ohio, silent since February 27th, 2013, back on the air, but then they were reported off again just before our deadline. By the way, does anyone remember what notable NRC member worked at a station on this frequency in this community? 1460 WDDY, Albany, New York, silent since September 28th, is back on the air as of January 29th with new owners. 1500 WASN, Youngstown, Ohio, silent since February 27th, 2013, back on, but then reported off again. WASN and WGFT, which we just told you about, are co-owned by the same company. FCC's cash register continues to ring a familiar tune with a fine to WKVM 810 San Juan, Puerto Rico. Fined $7,000 for failure to have an effective locked fence or other secure enclosure around its antenna structure. Barack Broadcasting owes an extra tough $10,000 tower fencing fine after the FCC found almost half the fence surrounding the north tower of WTOR 770, Youngstown, New York, on the ground. Not only that, the FCC agent said when he tried to lift the fencing off the ground, it was very difficult because the grass had grown through and around the fence. Even worse, the gate and fencing support posts for the middle tower had been removed and were lying on the ground. The agent concluded that things had been in this sorry state for a significant period of time, and that means a tough write-up of the violations, which included no fence around the perimeter of the property. Barack Broadcasting responded to the December 2012 notice of violation by saying it had done the necessary repair work and the fences had collapsed during a recent cleanup of brush and weeds. The baseline fine for tower fencing is $7,000, but the FCC loads on an extra $3,000 because of an earlier notice of violation. Repeated failure to respond to FCC letters costs a Florida AM $8,000. The procrastination continues to the present day and stems from inspections conducted at Clermont License WWFL 1340 in the summer of 2012. The FCC's Tampa office issued a notice of violation, but licensee Onda Mexicana Radio Group never responded. A follow-up visit had Onda Mexicana claiming it had indeed replied, but the FCC says it never got the correspondence, and in any case, the copy it was shown during the visit didn't answer all the questions. Last March, the FCC gave Onda Mexicana 10 days to respond, then agreed to extend that to 30 days, but again, the owner didn't deliver on its promise. The base fine for not responding to an FCC communication is $4,000, but in this case, for ignoring the request multiple times, the fine is cranked up to $8,000. A Kansas broadcaster is facing $42,000 in fines for violations. On October 24, 2013, the Enforcement Bureau's Kansas City office issued a notice of apparent liability for forfeiture and ordered $21,000 to 1480 KQAM in Wichita, Kansas, for operating the station out of compliance with its authorization and for public inspection file violations, as reflected in the notice of apparent liability. On October 22, 2012, an agent from the Kansas City office observed the station failed to operate at authorized nighttime power limits. The agent also observed the station's antenna's directional pattern was not within authorized levels. KQAM AM argued that its hiring of a consultant to do testing at the station's monitoring points before the inspection is evidence of a program to maintain rule compliance, which shows that any operational violations were not willful. KQAM AM alleges that someone with knowledge and a key to our facility had tampered with the transmitter and provided no other explanation for why the station was operating with more than authorized power at night and with unauthorized directional patterns. The ownership of KQAM stated that the agent from the Kansas City office mistakenly misunderstood shock and dismay by the station personnel during the inspection upon discovery of the alleged tampering as ignorance regarding why the station operated over power. But this problem didn't stop with KQAM. On October 24th, 2013, the Enforcement Bureau's Kansas City office issued a notice of apparent liability for forfeiture and order for $21,000 to KGSO for operating the station out of compliance with its authorization and for public inspection file violations. On October 21st and 22nd, 2012, an agent observed the station operate above its authorized daytime power limit and operate in daytime mode at night. On October 22nd, the agent also observed the station operate substantially at variance from authorized directional parameters without checking monitoring points, suspending operations, or reducing power to prevent interference. The licensee argued for a reduction in the twin $21,000 fines for overpower operation and public file violations based on a history of compliance. But the FCC staff unearths fines from 2012 against a couple of sister stations. So it's up to Stackline to write checks for the full amount of the original fines, and that's $42,000. The last two stations in Kansas also have another problem, which you'll hear in a news story later in the magazine. With sincere thanks to Sean Axelrod, Bill Hale, Steve Kennedy, Scott Feibusch, Bruce Conti, Wayne Heinen, and Fred Vobey, that's been our AM Switch. I'm Dave Alpert, turning it over to Mark Durenberger, who we understand has fled Minnesota for the tropical paradise-like weather of Florida. Now here's Mark.
National Radio Club.
Thanks, Dave, and we're happy you tuned into this March 2014 Bandscan, because this month we begin a series of recordings of stations we've never heard on this broadcast, all of them so ably collected by the amazing Double Delta antenna. In November of last year, we placed such an antenna on a low mesa in the highlands of western Colorado, adjusting the antenna for a sweep of the southwestern part of the continent. The results were gratifying, and we're proud to share them, since so many of these stations have never been heard in our reports. It was a glorious autumn evening well into the DX season, and the weather, well, the weather was as pleasant as only the high desert can offer. Temps in the 70s and clear skies. And the AM radio band was bereft of noise from the lightning of late summer just past. There were two of us hail fellows, as usual. Normally this event includes a desert campfire with us sitting around swapping lies and discussing life. But this time, the band was jumping and neither of us ever put the headphones down. We had laid out two of these Double Delta antennas, one pointed east-west and one north-south. The arrays are reversible, favoring one direction and negating the other. The result is that we ended up with a plethora of recorded information from an area not previously captured, and we're just now sifting it all out. The Pacific Coast signals are the subject of the first part of our report. Having recorded from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. to the west, we encountered different stations coming up and disappearing as the paths opened ever westward and as stations changed power at their local sunset times. Some of them good copy, others will require careful listening, as is usual the case for new catches. Then there were the frequencies where there was just too much garbola to decipher any single station. Finally, we note the main coverage lobe of the antenna was west-southwest, so not too much action from the Pacific Northwest. Now, I freely admit that scanning 106 frequencies from each of three top-of-the-hour ID windows, 5, 6, and 7 p.m. Mountain Time, is an incredible amount of work, but it's fun, too. Our presentation will choose from various times on each frequency to let you hear all the different IDs we heard and were able to decode. We aren't going to subject you to 106 channels times 3 hours, or we'd be here until Fred retires. And if we don't get going pretty soon, Fred will retire. So here's part one, the series we'll call the Great Far Western Band Scan. Once we start, we'll tell you station and recorded time. Remember, the antenna doesn't change, just the propagation. On 540, we began with KNMX Las Vegas, New Mexico, taking this in at 5 p.m. By the 6 o'clock hour, KNMX has gone to 20 watts. KYAH Delta Utah dropped to 10 watts, so all we heard was a mad mix. But by the 7 p.m. recording, KRXA Carmel Valley, California came up, even though they had dropped to 500 watts an hour earlier. No ID on KXRA, but they mention Rod and Reel Radio, and the website confirms the station. Here are KNMX at 5 and KRXA at 7.
You're listening to 540 KNMX, Las Vegas, New Mexico, your sixth time station of the year. And now it's time for NBC News.
NBC News Radio, I'm Melissa Razor. Despite some intense bargaining, Western Powers did not make a deal with Iran.
AM540 or RodReelRadio.com. Going to take a break right now. We'll be back right after this commercial break.
On 550, Craig, Colorado is usually a serious pest, but they're on the deaf side of the antenna. Nothing at 5. By 6, KFYI Phoenix has come up, but they're still not usable. Then Bakersfield, California comes into the mix. At 7 p.m., with California stations settled in at night powers, we heard KFYI again, about as well as we're going to, and you're still going to have to work for it. Typhoon 560 was quiet at 5. At 6, we copied the fabled KSFO from the Bay Area, and when they switched power away from us, up came KBLU in Yuma, Arizona. Oh, and after you hear the KBLU ID, hang in there. San Francisco sneaks back in.
By the time we realize that we're almost strangled to death, we'll be right back.
Y570 has a Salt Lake City station, KNRS. You'll hear the 6 p.m. break, already beating against co-channel stations. And by 7 p.m., washed out by the emergence of two California stations as the sun was going down in their direction. This underlines what we'll talk about in a bit. There's a sort of sweet spot in time where a target to the west first comes through, but an hour later, other stations west of that target start coming up, and the channel ends up as an unusable mix. So, Salt Lake City at 6.
Space is limited, so please RSVP by calling 801-990-2900. Call them today and tell them Glenn Beck sent you. 801-990-2900. 801-990-2900. 105.7 FM, KNRS Center.
Radio. I'm Lisa Lucera. President Obama offering condolences and sending in the Marines to aid victims of the super...
Fresno and the mighty KMJ own 580, easy one at 7. From Cedar City, Utah, comes KSUB on 590. Both stations stayed with us through the evening. Here are 580 and 590.
For America's number one acne system, call 1-800-630-9798. That's 1-800-630-9798.
KMJ-FM Fresno.
AM 580. FM 105.9. Worldwide at KMJNow.com.
CBS News, I'm Dave Beezer. Category 1 Typhoon Haiyan made landfall in Vietnam, but as a much weaker storm than it was in the Philippines.
This free offer won't last. Call 800-865-0967. That's 800-865-0967. Call 800-865-0967.
This is Talk Radio 590 KSUB Cedar City, a Cherry Creek radio station.
The typhoon that devastated the Philippines has made landfall in Vietnam. It has weakened and is cutting a path through the Philippines with thousands of believed to have died of damage.
From beginning to end of our recording, the king of 600 was KOGO, K-O-G-O, San Diego. That signal came in and stayed in.
Call 1-800-NEW-WALK. That's 1-800-NEW-WALK. 1-800-NEW-WALK. Goodfeet, your arch support store.
Get your news at the top and half of every hour. News Radio 600 KOGO. KOGO and KMYI HD2. San Diego's source for breaking news. News Radio 600 KOGO.
Radio. I'm Lisa Lucera. The typhoon that devastated the Philippines has made landfall in Vietnam.
And by the way, if you wonder why you're not hearing more than just the usual ID snips, it's primarily because all these stations, as you can hear, are running those obnoxious 800 spot or public service spots. Those 800 exhortations are called PI or per inquiry commercials. The station is paid only if legitimate responses to the 800 number occur. And sometimes we'd have to go back 5 minutes or more to find something of local flavor so you could sample the market. And even that rarely happens. So our judgment call is to start a few seconds before the top of the hour and go to a few seconds past. Besides, that's all that's really practical given the amount of time we have to share. At the 5 p.m. recording, Rosarito, Mexico was just barely heard on 610 and faded quickly, so the 610 catch is KAVL, Lancaster, California.
Would this be enough social interaction? Or is this only the beginning of something larger? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. Get interactive at peacecorps.gov/game.
We are Fox Sports.
This is KAVL Lancaster, Fox Sports 610,
the Antelope Valley's home for sports.
Fox Sports trending now.
Ohio State has moved up to number 3.
Man, I wonder if the producers who put the Fox opens together reach out to find every sound in the world and mix them all together to get attention. But that's just the curmudgeon in me speaking, I guess. Here's a saner signal from Phoenix on 620.
The countdown to Arizona's next big game has officially started. Check out azsuperbowl.com.
The home of the Suns. ArizonaSports620.com and mobile.
Let's pause 10 seconds. Station identification on the Suns Basketball Network.
It's the weekend now, but get the sports news you need to know before getting to work.
It's Doug and Wolf,
Monday morning, 6 to 10.
Arizona Sports 620.
KDAR,
Phoenix.
Suns still shooting a very poor 31% from the field.
6:30 was mostly covered by the glorious IBOC from KFI 640. But at 7 p.m., KPLY Reno, Nevada, bravely came up out of the noise.
Over the past 75 years, the expressions have changed, but one thing hasn't. Saving money with Geico.
6-7, Cowboys 3. Let's pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is Westwood One, your home for Sunday Night Football.
KPLY Reno. Fox Sports Radio, 6:30 a.m. Reno's home for sports talk and JT the Brick.
Kaplan with you from the Superdome as they tend to Dwayne Harris.
Skipping KFI and giving up 650 because of the IBOC, we next end up at 660. Now, the story here isn't that KTNN would come up strong since it's a 50 kilowatter pointing west, but that there was a significant beat at 6 p.m., likely from KWVE in Oildale, California, as the sun set over Oildale. Oildale? It's a suburb of Bakersfield. We caught him before sign-off.
Window Rock, Smith Lake.
Rayberger, Typhoon Haiyan has made landfall in Vietnam.
KBOI, for some reason, is always elusive for us. We hear the end of the commercial, but the ID gets buried in the mix with Simi Valley, as Murphy would have it, 7 p.m.
That's 1-800-522-2213. The same channel for less than $20. Call 1-800-522-2213 for details.
$6.80 KNBR, heard it a million times, we skip it. $6.90 was covered all evening by XEWW in Rosarito. New to us.
Andrés Gutiérrez, el machete pa' tu billete y claro, los espero de lunes a viernes a las 12 del mediodía, aquí por las 690 AM.
Estás escuchando las 690 AM XEWW, transmitiendo desde las playas de Rosarito, Baja California, México. 690 AM.
El contenido de este programa no representa las opiniones de las 690 AM.
Over most of this great country, 700 is WLW, except for the daytimers. In the western part of this area, KALL Salt Lake City does a nice job of impersonating a full-service station. We hear them sounding strong, but with no ID.
All right, so tonight it's Real Salt Lake and the Portland Timbers. We'll take a quick break here on the Mazda pregame show. Come back with starting lineups once again and a few final thoughts before leg one kicks off here at Rio Tinto Stadium on ESPN 700.
Listening to RSL Match Day coverage on ESPN 700.
It's playoff coverage. Western Conference final, leg one tonight between Real Salt Lake and the Portland Timbers. The top-seeded Timbers against the second seed in the West, Real Salt Lake. Should be a good one tonight here at Rio Tinto Stadium. Mazda pregame show, James Russ, Brian Candler.
And 710 has KFIA in Carmichael, California at a kilowatt.
I'm Captain Christian Pebbles with Metro Fire. A working smoke detector is still one of the best defenses in the event of a fire. Make sure you have several smoke detectors. Check them monthly and replace the batteries every 6 months. Give yourself time to save the things you cannot replace, your family. For more information on fire safety, contact Metro Fire or your local fire agency.
KFIA, Carmichael, Sacramento.
We have SRN News. I'm Wally Hines in Washington. Typhoon Haiyan, just a shadow of his former self as it makes landfall in Vietnam, backing 74-mile-an-hour winds.
By the way, we also heard a bit of XEPQ on 710 from Mesquite, Chihuahua, Mexico.
Escuchando XEDP 710 de amplitud modulada con 5000 watts de potencia y XHDP 89.7 en frecuencia. potencia modulada con 10.000 watts de potencia. La Ranchera de Consuelo, transmitiendo desde sus estudios en calle segunda número 437, zona 4, ciudad de Cuauhtémoc, Chihuahua, México. Una estación del grupo BN Radio.
Well, that'll give you the flavor of what we're doing for now. Now let's join our de-expeditioners on their way back from the desert. This short audio clip will give you an idea of what we were thinking about when we finished that evening. Mike had not done a double delta, and I promised him recklessly that he would be blown away by it. Well, it took us probably an hour to set up one. What, maybe half an hour to do the second one?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I mean, it's proof positive. Two fools in the field can set up one, and even one fool in the field can set up one. So they are very, very simple, and I would, boy, for something that for people with limited space, you know, they take up a total of 120 feet for one double delta, and the fact that no ground is required, they're quiet. Obviously, I'm a big believer. I thought maybe Mark was giving me some of his Minnesota blarney when he sent me all the information on this antenna. And that thing worked wonders. I think it was probably the best day we've ever had in the field in the last 5 or 6 years. So good experience with the Double D.
Now, I am an old fool at this, and I would like to stay out all night DXing. But we've learned a couple of things along the way. First, I have to tell you this. I'm the one who wants to stay out and stay out and stay out. Last night, by 7 o'clock Mountain Time, which was well past sunset Pacific Time, I said, let's strike the set. And guess who said, oh no, we can't leave yet. I'm having too much fun. What happens is that at the very beginning, maybe before local sunset, and shortly after, you start to hear all sorts of fun stations. And as the darkness goes on, there are more and more stations showing up on each channel until you get to the point that those incredible catches that you got are overwhelmed by a bunch of other stations. So you get to a point of saturation. We had the same thing happen with the beverage. Had we been a little smarter when we had our beverages out, I think, Mike, we would have started a little earlier. And instead of going till the last dog was hung, it was late as midnight, we probably would have quit about 2 hours after sunset.
Yeah, I think probably the 7 o'clock hour was pretty much the peak for listening. And by 8 o'clock, which is the hour that I insisted that we stay for, it was getting pretty cluttered and getting harder and harder to pull out an individual station where there were a couple of weak stations. So one thing that may be of interest to some of you, while Mark was mainly busy with medium wave, I took about 30 minutes and experimented with the antenna on short wave and mainly the ham bands, and found that it worked really well from 160 up through 15 meters. 15 meters actually should have been all but gone at that time of the evening, and I had all kinds of signals coming in from South America and other areas. So this antenna works really well as an all-purpose antenna if you want to go out in the field especially and get away from a lot of ambient noise. It's a great receiving antenna, and maybe in the future we'll talk about transmitting on it. That's one thing we haven't tried yet. Great time.
This whole thing about pre- and post-sunset watching isn't new to any confirmed DXer, but a summation of the effects might be of interest, and the traditional approach might be of some value. So next month, we'll present a paper by Neil Kazaros given to our joint DX convention last August, in which Neil talks about some ways to predict good conditions. And after Neil's work, we'll get back to sharing the results. Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service. We're so appreciative that you find the time to look us up each month and spend some time in this corner. Till we connect again in April, good listening, DXers.
National Radio Club.
FCC AM comments. 154 parties filed comments in the FCC proceeding about revitalizing the AM band. As eclectic engineer Barry Mishkine says, many have rejected the FM translator route as a long-term solution. But at the same time, there is a good deal of support for using Channel 6 and 5 for AM migration. That's going to be a very tough slog. You've been reading about the comments filed by parties such as the NAB, and here's part of what Ubiquiti thinks. Any changes to the AM technical rules shouldn't impact the rollout of AM HD radio broadcasting. It's still backing the system for AMs. The creator of the HD radio technology says that about 340 AM stations are licensed to use its system, though it doesn't say how many are actually broadcasting with it. Anecdotally, a number of big AMs have switched off their hybrid analog-digital transmissions, going back to analog only. The comparable number for FM HD use is 1,890 licenses granted and more than 1,450 multicast channels. Again, we don't know who's actually on the air in HD. AM operator Ben Downs sees some creative ideas in these comments. Ben runs AMs and FMs in Bryan College Station, Texas, for Bryan Broadcasting, and he's been active in the AM Improvement Crusade. He's also led the NAB Radio Board Task Force on AM. But in these observations for NOW, he's speaking for himself, personally. Ben says, based on the comments filed, the FCC hit a home run with the one-per-station window for AMs to file for a translator. We don't know how much FM spectrum will be available in every market, so there were comments that Mattoon and Tell City, to expedite the move of existing translators, could be adopted straight up or with modifications. I'm especially happy to see all the ideas that address the secondary nature of a crossband translator. There are some good ideas about adding protection to these translators that are associated with AM stations, since AMs already have primary status. Anything that helps these translators operate on a more consistent footing is helpful for AM licensees. The fault line between large and small operators shows up in some of the ideas for the future. Clear Channel wants to keep the Class A SkyWave protection contours, while small operators see a relaxation of those protections as a way to get pre-post daytime power for their daytime-only stations. The ongoing testing by NAB Labs of AM in an all-digital mode was seen as a positive deep pass into the future for AM. Support for an all-digital sunrise was tempered by the recognition that AM countertop HD receivers are missing from the market.
New Republican Commissioner O'Reilly is for freedom and reviewing the ownership rules. As a House staffer, Mike O'Reilly worked on the 1996 Telecom Act, and he's keen on getting the FCC to finally finish one of the congressionally mandated quadrennial reviews. In his first public speech since taking his seat at the conservative Hudson Institute, O'Reilly observes that the FCC's 2010 quadrennial review never got done, and that it's arguably behind on its 2014 review. Based on the enthusiastic opening remarks about his tagline at the commission being freedom, O'Reilly would likely favor relaxing some rules, particularly with newspaper cross-ownership, it seems. He's open to thoughtfully updating the rules to reflect the realities of today's media marketplace, where Americans don't rely solely on local broadcasters and papers. By the way, O'Reilly says the tagline for the new Democratic Commission Chair Tom Wheeler is competition, which was his mantra during last year's Senate hearings that confirmed both he and O'Reilly.
And finally, to wrap up part one of the DX audio service for March, the North America Shortwave Association, otherwise known as NASWA, will announce preliminary program details for its 27th annual Winter SWL Festival. That's March the 14th and the 15th at the Doubletree Suites Hotel in Plymouth Meeting, Pennsylvania. Mark Fay of Australia will be bringing lots of air checks from his visits to North Korea, which should be interesting. And while the focus is mainly on shortwave, a number of medium wave related presentations are also planned as well. For more information, see the Fest webpage at www.swlfest.com. And speaking of conventions, we're still in need of a host for the National Radio Club Convention in 2014. If no one comes forward to host soon, we may not have an NRC convention this year. So please think about whether you're interested or not. For more information, contact Ernie Wesolowski at neerniew@yahoo.com. Or you can write to Ernie at 13312 Westwood Lane, Omaha, Nebraska, 68144. It's the top of the hour. Time for news.